Hey, Quinn.
How are you?
I'm swell. How are you?
I am alive.
That is good. Very proud of you for that.
I made my birthday list, like what I want for my birthday, and my brother has been like on Amazon for the last like half an hour. Yeah.
You need to give me a very specific list because I'm not good at buying presents.
I will. No, I just asked my family for, like, gift cards.
Love that. Love that.
I don't want them to buy me anything, although I did ask for, like, three specific things. But also I asked for money. Lights,
didn't you?
Yeah, I asked them for, oh my god, Amazon, stop recommending things to me. I asked them for plaid skirts because, just yes. Because.
Yes.
LED clip lights because I want to put them up in my room. Like ones that I can actually like clip stuff into. And then a constellation like projector light. But I told my brother not to worry about that because he was looking at it and he literally never spends more than like $25 on my presents, and those are like $40.
Those are amazing. I want one.
Yeah. And I also asked for a portable charger. So I think that's what he's getting me.
Love that. Amazing.
Yeah. He doesn't know what to do though, so I told him to text you if he needed help because you have one. Yeah. What is your life like right now, Grace?
It's much better than last quadmester.
That's good.
I can tell you that.
Mine is not.
My room is an absolute chaotic mess, but my life.
That's fair. Yeah. Mine is not better than last quadmester, but like I'm not like sad. It's fine.
But now we like switched because you had English and I had math, and now I have
English. You also had English.
Oh, I did. That's right.
Yes, you literally did. Yeah. No, I don't mind math. It's just boring. Yeah. I get like sleepy in it all the time, and then I get distracted, and I like start thinking about something completely different, and then I've missed like 5 minutes of him talking.
That's yeah. Sounds
yeah bad. It's literally what I do. We have people that are listening from like 10 different countries now.
Woo.
Yeah, so welcome if you're not from Canada or like the United States. Like, I'm sorry to our American listeners, but like that's not that exciting because my cousins are from the United States. I've been to like 10 different states. Like, it's not really that exciting to me, but like thanks for listening. Don't leave.
Please don't leave. We love you.
Yeah, no, I don't know. It's just been like a time. My mom and I are almost done The Crown. What am I supposed to do with my life now?
You find another thing to hyperfixate over.
I'm hyperfixating on the Fosters.
Oh my god!
Actually, no, I'm still finishing one day at a time because I'm legally watching the last season.
For legal reasons, that's a joke.
But it's only 7 episodes long, and I'm actually, like, really sad about it. That's not okay. I need, like, more. See, the thing is, I haven't watched that many shows that are either still going on or, like, just ended. Like, most of the shows that I've watched in my life ended, like, at least 5 years before I started watching them.
I see.
So, like, I'm fine with that because I know that they're done. I know that nothing is happening, and yeah. I know that I can't change anything. Like, Gilmore Girls ended when we were, like, 3. Yeah. So, like, I didn't care. And then Year in the Life, like, it was just, like, a reboot. I wasn't really – it also was in, like, 2016, so, like, it wasn't that big of a deal to me. Glee, same thing. It ended 5 years ago. Like,
you knew
I can't change it. Yeah, so – I don't know. Watching things that are still happening is just very confusing to me. I mean, One Day at a Time isn't happening anymore, but it ended like 4 months ago. Like, it's really, really weird, and it makes me uncomfortable.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. I just, it's not healthy, but whatever. I don't really care. Did you have a good Valentine's Day? Did you get the presents?
No.
I got present.
Okay.
From my parents.
So I've never had a job before, right? Because I couldn't have a job. I've never had a job before. Everyone else had stuff. My dad got stuff from my mom. My mom got stuff from my dad. My dad gave us each a rose, which was really cute.
Oh, that's nice.
My mom made cookies, so that was fun. And then my sister got My sister got my mom and I gifts, and she got herself a gift from me because I didn't get her anything because I'm broke.
Okay, we don't get each other gifts. Like, my brother and I don't get my parents anything. My parents get us stuff, but here's the thing. My present, if my parents are listening, like, thank you for it. Like, I love you, but, like, I knew I was getting it. Like, they asked me, and I thought it was just, like, they're trying to replace my band. You know my, like, smartwatch thing that I have?
Yeah.
The band was, like, really faded and, like, gross.
Oh.
So they got me a new one, but, like, I thought we were just getting that because I needed a new band. And then it was my Valentine's Day present. My brother got tennis balls.
Love that.
Yeah.
I did do one thing fun on Valentine's.
What did you do?
I had a throwback with Ella, my sister, Ella, and we watched Monsters High, their Valentine's movie.
What did I do? Henry and I talked on FaceTime. Henry wants to cameo on this podcast.
He should.
I watched like 6 episodes of The Fosters.
Amazing.
It was not my day yesterday. What else did I do? I had an Interact meeting. I didn't really do anything. I talked about that stupid Natalie Dormer movie that we watched.
Oh no.
Yeah, my parents thought it was like really dumb, but my brother thought it was funny. That's a great segue because Natalie Dormer played Anne Boleyn, and we're here to talk about Anne Boleyn.
Wow.
Well, not actually. We're here to talk about Elizabeth because she will never be someone that we cover on this podcast because she doesn't have a bad reputation.
True.
She has like one of the best, she has the best reputation of that whole family.
But we still want to talk
about her. Not gonna lie. But like I needed to talk about her in relation to Anne. Because part of Anne's, one of her things, her bad reputation is that she was a bad mom.
Right.
Like, didn't care. I think people that think that really just don't understand the context of being a royal mother. Even being a mother in the 1530s. Like,
yeah.
It was very, very different to how our parents parent today. Well, most parents parent today. So, yeah. We're talking about how Elizabeth felt about her mother. And, their kind of relationship. Unfortunately, like 75% of this is going to be after Anne died, but it's all in relation to Anne.
All in relation.
But like, you can't expect me to talk for a long time about Anne and Elizabeth while Anne was alive, because Elizabeth was alive while Anne was alive for 2 years and like 7 months.
Yeah.
Which is just not cash money, Henry.
Not really.
Not cash money. Yeah. I don't know, just little baby Elizabeth chilling, and then all of a sudden, your mom's gone. That was the sword, by the way.
That was an amazing impression, I think.
I think I should be one of those, like, people that does voice acting, but, like, the sound. Like, in the movie, when they all had to be, like, the pets and make, like, the...
Yeah, or, like, you know all those... The people, it's like a specific art thing where they just find sounds to do stuff, but you'll just make the sounds with your voice and you can just imitate it.
It's actually very cool. And anyone who can do that, I have a lot of respect for you.
Like, you're amazing.
You are amazing. Okay, let's get cracking.
Crack-a-lack-a-lackin'.
So, Anne Boleyn was not the only victim of the fall of the Boleyn faction in May 1536. There were 5 men that were also executed, R.I.P. But there was also a small 2-year-old girl who was a victim of the brutal events that is often shoved to the side. It is really, like, amazing to think that this little tiny toddler who was made illegitimate when Anne was killed and who was then banished from court for a while went on to become a great monarch. Because not only did Anne Boleyn's daughter become Queen of England, but she also became known as Gloriana and the Virgin Queen, and her reign is known as the Golden Age. Mm-hmm. If Anne could look down from heaven, she certainly had the last laugh.
Oh, yes. She definitely did.
I literally, like, Henry's, if there's heaven and hell, Henry's definitely not in heaven. But
I think we've confirmed
that. I really want them to be, like, in some afterlife where she can just, like, pop in and yell at him and then leave so that she doesn't have to, like, chill with him.
That'd be so funny. I bet she's already done that.
Yeah. Anne, if you're listening.
Maybe she just has, yell like, at your douchebag. A yell at Henry Day and, like...
Go listen to your... Go yell at your douchebag ex-husband, please, my love.
Yes.
Anne didn't really have much chance to be a mother because that opportunity was taken away from her. And you can really only imagine the fears and worries, especially since we are not mothers ourselves, that must have eaten away at her during those days where she was imprisoned in the tower. Fears for Elizabeth's safety and Elizabeth's future, worries about her child growing up without a mother, and concern that Elizabeth would be told that her mother had committed treason and adultery. Because that would have been a very real fear for her, probably.
Yeah.
And there would also have been a lot of grief that she would never see her little girl grow up into a woman.
Yeah.
Because, you don't, like, obviously, that's not very fun.
No.
And she really loved Elizabeth a lot. Yeah. So, on the 7th of September, between 3 and 4, Anne gave birth to a little girl, which must have been a huge blow to her parents because they're expecting the baby to be a son. And therefore, like, their heir, their Prince of Wales or whatever. But, however, the couple seemed to bounce back. Henry named his daughter Elizabeth after both of her grandmothers, and he was soon busy arranging a lavish public christening for the 10th of September. After the christening, Elizabeth was taken back to Anne, but then the princess's own nursery staff took control of the baby, as was royal protocol. If there's any truth in Henry not allowing Anne to breastfeed, it is probably more to do with making sure that she can get pregnant again quickly, rather than, like, him trying to, like, him saying it's, like, an inconvenience or whatever, because it was technically Anne's duty to get pregnant quickly and give him a son. That's what queens are there for. They're there to create heirs. Yes. Whatever the truth about Anne's wish to suckle her own child and go against the usual royal protocol and tradition, which, like, wouldn't be super out of character for Anne. Yeah, she
definitely
doesn't always mesh with what people want her to do. Anne was quite clearly very pleased with and very proud of her little girl. In Elizabeth's Women, which is a book that I now really want to read, it just talks about how Elizabeth's, like, biggest relationships were with women in her life.
Right, yeah.
There's also, like, a whole thing in this book. I forget what it was, which book I was, like, researching, and then, like, it popped up. Talked about how Elizabeth and Mary both were really screwed up. They both had really big daddy issues. But it, like, affected them in different ways. Like, Mary was so, like, dependent on Philip when she married him. But Elizabeth didn't ever want to get married.
Right. I see.
Woohoo. But in Elizabeth's Women, Tracy Borman, she's, like, a pretty reputable historian. Mm-hmm. She does, like, those documentaries where they, like, film historians talking. Sure. My bread and butter sometimes. She writes of how courtiers were often embarrassed by Anne's displays of affection for her baby because, like, you didn't really do that. And that she loved to have Elizabeth next to her on a cushion, just, like, chilling, I guess. I don't know, like, this little baby just sitting there on a cushion, rather than have her be shut away in the nursery away from her mother. Elizabeth's removal from court to her own household at Hatfield on the 10th of December, 1533, so she's, like, 3 months old, 4 months old, I can't count, must have been a huge wrench for Anne, even though it was just a few miles away, so it actually wasn't that far. Which is good, because then she and Henry could go see her. But Anne still wasn't expected to visit her daughter very much, and she would be expected to get on with her, like, queenly duties and leave Elizabeth's upbringing to Lady Bryan and her staff. Which probably was very hard for Anne, because, like, she did get sent away at, like, 12 or whatever to go to, like, the continent for her education, but for most of her childhood she lived with her mother at Hever. Yeah. Like, she had a nurse and stuff, like, her mom wasn't the primary caregiver, but she was still with her mother all the time.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah.
Yeah. Anne did visit her daughter as often as her schedule would allow. There's not, like, a whole bunch of records about Henry visiting. There's, we know that Anne visited a lot. Henry did really, like, love her. Like, he probably didn't have a lot of time to visit her, to be honest. Like, he is king. can't just really leave, but still Anne is supposed to have gone more. And she also kept up very fervent correspondence with those who she had entrusted with Elizabeth's care. Henry ordered Elizabeth weaned, so, like, no more breast milk for her. She has to, like, eat food now. When she was 2 years and 1 month old, they did it really late then. I don't really know why. Because, like, obviously you can breastfeed your baby for as long as you want. But, like, by today's standards, that's very late to wean your baby. then he noted in his order that Anne was enclosing a letter. It's lost. We don't have it anymore. Because, like, they probably didn't really need to keep it. And it was likely with, like, we're thinking with further instructions and advice on what to do. Because, like, it's her baby. Mm-hmm. And since some of Anne's personal records from 1536, I think it's 1536, survive, we know that Anne took great care planning her baby daughter's wardrobe. She personally selected a lot of cloth and trimming. Anne really was into, like, fashion and stuff. And she definitely was, like, she really liked to plan Elizabeth's outfits, which, I mean, that's pretty chill. Elizabeth also was very into that. So if they had been allowed more time together, they probably would have, like, undoubtedly enjoyed a close bond. But, I mean, in Elizabeth's, like, teenage years, they probably would have butted heads because they were very similar in personality. Because Anne and Henry are kind of similar in personality in that sort of way. They both have, like, a really big temper, and Elizabeth inherited both of their
She's, like, double everything. She
would have fought so much. April, Anne had been informed, like, in 1536, that her husband's staff was now questioning members of her own household, and a cancellation of the couple's trip to Calais, which, if you remember, that's where they consummated their marriage before they were married.
Yeah.
They consummated their relationship, but they were supposed to go back in 1536, and Henry canceled the trip, like, right before she got arrested. So Anne decided to confront her husband about the rumors that he was displeased with her, because she must have known that her time was running out, and she appealed to her husband in the most dramatic way possible through her daughter. The religious reformer Eliseus was present at this tragic occasion. He wasn't, like, there, but, like, he was near, I guess. Yeah. I don't know. It was on Sunday, April 30th, 1536, and he later retold the story to Queen Elizabeth when she asked about it. Hey, Lizzie, why are you asking? But, like, chill. He said, this is, like, quoted, "Alas, I shall never forget the sorrow I felt when I saw the sainted queen, your most religious mother, carrying you, still a baby, in her arms, and entreating the most serene king, your father, in Greenwich Palace, from the open window of which he was looking into the courtyard, and she brought you to him. The faces and gestures of the speakers plainly showed the king was angry." So that's the scene where, in the Tudors, when Natalie, like, runs.
Yeah, like, when she's
with Elizabeth in her arms. Yeah. And that poor little child actress looks absolutely so terrified. Which means that she's doing a really good job, and I really hope that that's accurate.
Me too.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that's like, they did a good job with that of showing how, like, scared she was. I don't know how accurate it was, but no one can know, because this man is, like, the only one that,
like, said anything about it.
He wasn't like right there, so obviously he doesn't know exactly what's happened. Before Anne was imprisoned in the Tower, she made provisions for her daughter's welfare. So just 4 days before the now infamous May Day joust, which you're going to hear more about in our next episode, but basically the May Day joust was the last time that Anne ever saw Henry. Because someone had confessed to committing adultery with her or something, and they came up and told Henry, like, they whispered it in his ear, like, a servant or whatever, and he just, like, stood up and left.
Oh.
And she never saw him again. Dun, dun, dun. Yeah. Right before that happened, Anne entrusted the Boleyn family chaplain, Matthew Parker, with her daughter's spiritual well-being. Matthew Parker did actually fulfill this duty, and upon Elizabeth's accession, he was actually rewarded for his loyalty to her and her mother, and he was made Archbishop of Canterbury, which is a very, very big deal in England. That's, like, a super high position.
Good
for him. So, good job, Matthew. Parker actually preserved a lot of Anne's and her family members' letters and papers before their ruin, and most likely he entrusted them to Elizabeth sometime after 1558, which is when Mary died, so, you know, she's now queen, so he can give her this stuff. And those documents, if he did give them to her, probably did a great deal to illuminate for Elizabeth the life of the mother that she had barely known. So then Anne died.
Very, very sad.
After the execution of Queen Anne, the court was really, like, ripe with horrible slander against her. And given the crimes that she had been convicted of, adultery, questions concerning her daughter's paternity were circulating. Now, if you look at Elizabeth, there is no doubt in the world that she's Henry's daughter. She looks, like, very, very much like him. She looks very much like Anne if you look carefully, but if you look at her first glance, you're gonna know that that's Henry's kid. Like, she looks a lot like him. But I guess one of the people that Anne was supposed to have committed adultery with, I think, was Henry Norris, was also a ginger.
So they were like, oh.
Yeah, so they're like, oh, yeah. Like, Mary said that, she's like, you're not even my father's daughter. You're Henry Norris's daughter, like, when she was queen, I think. But that's just called Mary is insecure and is being rude because she has not had a nice life and she's like emotionally stunted.
Yeah.
Sometimes she's just Rachel Berry, you know?
Yeah.
Because she's emotionally stunted.
She is. Yeah.
Yeah. But there's, like, a lot of questions concerning her daughter's paternity. We don't really know how much, like, credence Henry gave to those rumors because he really didn't seem to, like, buy them. In the Tudors, he does, like, yell, she's not even my daughter, which, you know what, he probably did have, like, actual concerns about that because he made himself believe that those things were true.
He got himself all paranoid.
Like, that what he had accused Anne of was true. So he probably did have doubts. Like, I don't think he ever, like, said to Elizabeth, you might not be my kid, because, like, he doesn't want to admit that she's not his kid, mm-hmm. that she might not be his kid, because she's, like, a pretty awesome kid. She's very mm-hmm. smart.
Yeah.
And she excels in things that he himself enjoys. So he's, like, it's a matter of pride, right? Like, he's never going to want to ever say that his daughter is maybe not his, but she definitely is. We're not saying that she's not. She's 110% Henry's kid because Anne didn't commit adultery. Yes, so,
indeed.
Lady Margaret Bryan and Elizabeth's gentlewoman and later governess, Kat Champernowne. Lady Margaret Bryan, like, left Elizabeth when Edward was born, but when Anne was killed, Margaret was still her governess. They no doubt shielded her as best they could from what had really happened because she was, like, 2.5. They're not going to tell her, oh, yeah, your mom got executed because she committed treason and adultery. Yeah. Like, they would have shielded it with her, like, from her. Margaret, Lady Bryan, was the half-sister of Elizabeth Howard, who's Anne Boleyn's mother, and Catherine Champernowne, who later became Cat Ashley or Cat Astley, like, you can mm-hmm. spell it either way. They were both installed by Queen Anne to take care of the Princess Elizabeth. So, obviously, Lady Bryan is Anne's, like, half-step aunt or whatever. I don't... so, like, she's a relative, so that's why she's installed. Like, she also had, like, connections, mm-hmm. but that's part of the reason that she was installed. And Catherine Champernowne was some sort of a Boleyn family connection. We don't know how. Shown favor by Queen Anne, and so she was likely to have always, like, thought that she was indebted to her former benefactress. These women really cared for Elizabeth as best as they could, given the king's lackadaisical, whenever it works for him, interest in his daughter's upbringing, and they provided her with some stability. But the walls of the nursery really couldn't hide Elizabeth from the truth forever, because, you know, she's a very, very smart kid. We don't know when or how Elizabeth discovered that her mother had been beheaded on the orders of her father, but we do know that she recognized the change in her status by the way people are addressing her. We know that Elizabeth was very incredibly perceptive and precocious from the time that she could speak, and very soon after her mother's death, she is recorded to have remarked, "How hath it yesterday, my lady princess, and today but my lady Elizabeth," because she's a bastard now. So they don't have to call her my lady princess because she's not a princess. She's just Lady Elizabeth.
Yeah.
Which, like, rip.
Sucks.
But
for her.
Yeah. People do sometimes, like, call Mary and Elizabeth princess, Mary and Princess Elizabeth after, like, when Henry reinstates them to the act of succession. So when they get back, like, in the line of succession in 1544, like, people started calling them that again, but they never officially get the titles back. But people do, like, especially Mary more, I think, because she was princess mm-hmm. for so much longer. But some people do still call them Princess Mary and Princess Elizabeth. They're more often referred to as the king's daughters, though.
Yeah.
That's just it's a very easy way to address them, no matter what, because they are the king's daughters, depending, like, their status doesn't change that. Elizabeth probably found out what had really happened to her mother over time, because she was probably only initially told a simplified version as a child, and then, like, some placating half-truths that she questioned the story as she grew. So she would have found out more and more as she got older. Hopefully she didn't find out about the nature of her mother's demise by overhearing it, because on May 26, 1536, so Anne has just been killed, she's staying at Hunsdon House with Lady Mary, and Lady Kingston, who Lord Kingston is the jailer at the Towers, so he's the man that was there with Anne, and Lady Kingston was one of her, like, ladies in waiting while she was there, and Lady Kingston visited Lady Mary on May 26th, probably to give Mary a first-hand account of Anne's demise. So hopefully that Elizabeth would, didn't hear that. I'm sure they kept her out of the way, but, you know, she's like a toddler. They find, especially ones that are really annoying and interested in things. That was literally me. I was always there. People were like, I'm not. Yeah. However, she found out the growing awareness of her bastard status must have caused Elizabeth, when she was maturing, recurring distress and enduring insecurities. It definitely affected her emotional development. R.I.P. to Elizabeth and Mary's emotional stability. Most historians agree that her mother's death at the hands of her father, along with other tragic fates of the women in her family at the hands of men, was one of the primary reasons that Elizabeth resolved herself never to marry. The execution of her mother's cousin and her young stepmother, Catherine Howard, in 1542, which happened 2 days ago when we're recording this, so R.I.P. to my love. R.I.P. It's Mary's birthday tomorrow.
Happy birthday in advance.
Happy birthday, Mary. Wait, no. It's on the 18th. I always get it confused because it's 1516. Right. February 18th, 1516. Well, whatever. We'll have a birthday party for you, Mary. But Catherine Howard got executed in 1542 for similar charges to Anne that she was actually guilty of. But she was a teenager. What is she supposed to know? Henry's an old fat man. I would also have cheated on him. Just kidding, I probably wouldn't have. I don't think I'm, like, I feel like I'd be too anxious.
You'd, like, get too scared.
Yeah, would I just wait for him to die? Yeah. This likely brought Elizabeth's feelings about marriage and her mother to a fever pitch, because she's, like, 9 now. She kind of understands things a little bit better. Like, obviously, 9-year-olds are not always perceptive, but this is a very perceptive 9-year-old, especially in a time where kids are treated like adults, that, like, her status is, like, so high that she's treated like a kid, but also like an adult from a very young age. So she knows things, along with her knowledge of the sordid and sometimes sad marriages of her paternal aunts. So that would be Margaret Tudor and Mary Tudor, Queen of France. My grandma
Mary.
Grandma Mary. You know what I found out? I found out that Queen Elizabeth II, her mom is, like, directly descended from Mary Tudor, like my grandma Mary Tudor. So, Elizabeth, hit me up to come visit you in Buckingham Palace. Did you hear that Meghan and Harry are having another baby? They announced it yesterday. I'm really excited because their first baby is very cute. Yeah, okay. Elizabeth's lifelong favorite, Robert Dudley. That's the one that she maybe banged, but we don't know. They definitely loved each other more than they should have since he was married. He's the Earl of Leicester, which my teacher is Mr. Leicester, like, from last year's English. His name is Mr. Leicester, spelled the exact same way, and he's British, so I'm like, but... Because what they do is, like, they don't call him Dudley, they call him Lester. Like, they use, like, your title name. So I really want to know if Mr. Lester is descended from the Earl of Leicester. Like, this is, like, a real concern for me that I need to know this. I don't know. He's teaching online right now, so can't ask him. But Robert Dudley recalled Elizabeth declaring at 8 years old, which would have been the age that she was when Catherine Howard was imprisoned and executed, because her birthday is in September. So in 1542 in February, she would have only been 8 still. She said, "I will never marry." He remembers her saying that. That's true. So, way to stick to your guns, my love. The young Elizabeth had experienced a lot of family induced trauma, and she was trying to make sense of it all at a very young and very vulnerable age. Since Cat Champernowne became, Elizabeth calls her Cat, yes. So that's what we're going to call her. That's her name. There's like 16 billion Catherines, so Elizabeth was like, you're Cat now. She became a surrogate mother figure to Elizabeth, and she served her until Cat died in 1565. Elizabeth was very, very close to Cat. She basically was like her second mom. Which is kind of nice because she needed that. But Kat maybe wasn't always the best role model, but like, whatever. We love Kat. I do love Kat. She just got like arrested. But whatever. We can assume that whatever Kat thought of Anne Boleyn would have been shared either purposefully or inadvertently with Elizabeth, even though Henry had like forbidden anyone to speak to Elizabeth about her mother. In Alison Weir's book, The Young Elizabeth, Kat kind of, like, tells her bits and pieces. I read it, like, 2 years ago, so I don't remember, like, exactly, but I, like, it's kind of, a lot of it is about Elizabeth and her mom. So, that's pretty chill. By 1544, we have our first clue to show us what Elizabeth thought about her mother. So, this very strong piece of evidence comes to us from the Whitehall family painting called The Family of Henry VIII. Alison Weir references the evidence and its significance to the bond Elizabeth was forging with her deceased mother in several of her books, including The Young Elizabeth. Around the year 1544, Henry had a brilliant piece of Tudor propaganda commissioned to portray his ideal nuclear family and also to reiterate his act of succession that same year. And now he hangs in Hampton Court Palace. So everyone that doesn't know this painting, search it up. Basically, what it is Henry Edward and Jane Seymour, who has been dead for like way too many years now to be included in this. She's been dead for like 7 years, but she is in it because she is Edward's mom. So Catherine Parr, who is married to Henry, is nowhere to be found, but Jane Seymour is there.
Oh my. Like,
oh, I don't know. That I feel like I'd be mad. I mean, Catherine didn't really like love him, but like I'm probably kind of annoyed. And then Elizabeth and Mary. So it's like Henry, Edward, and Jane are all under like a canopy, like right in the middle of the portrait. And then Elizabeth and Mary are on like the far outskirts of the painting on either side. Like they're there, but they're so far out. It's so funny.
Oh.
But yeah, search it up, everyone. And Elizabeth is in it. She's about 10 or 11. And she's shown wearing around her neck a pendant in the shape of an A. Let's think about this. Where's Elizabeth getting this A from? Her name starts with an E. Her last name starts with a T.
I wonder.
Who has an A name? Our mother. Initial pendants were really popular in Tudor times. And we know that Anne had at least three initial pendants that were made. The aforementioned A, the famous B necklace, and an AB, which she wears in a Nidhall portrait. So Elizabeth somehow got this this pendant. I don't know how. Like, somehow she got it. She's like, oh, my love, what are you doing? But Elizabeth was probably, she was probably wearing that pendant, and it had been belonged to her mother often enough for it to have been associated with her. Like, and the lady who wrote this, most of the research that I did from Being Bess, she agrees with Alison Weir's conclusion that for Elizabeth to publicly display her connection to her mother by donning the pendant in the portrait, was not only a quiet act of defiance, which Henry must have chosen to ignore given that he approved the portrait and didn't have anyone like paint over it or whatever, but it also proves that she must have been already told enough sympathetic things about her mother to have formed a good opinion of her. This means that the royal edict to never speak of Anne Boleyn and Elizabeth's presence, basically the reason that Henry didn't really want people to speak of Anne and Elizabeth's presence was so that Elizabeth wouldn't become like Anne. Because we don't want her whoring it up everywhere. Joke's on you, Henry. She never married. Which means that your dynasty ended. And perhaps King Henry had accepted that his daughter had already made up her mind on her mother's innocence, and he wasn't going to fight the matter with Elizabeth, who was just as stubborn as he was, or he literally just didn't care. By 1548, the young Elizabeth was blossoming into an ambitious pupil thanks to the education and attention that was given to her by Catherine Parr. Elizabeth's choice of literary text to translate as a gift for Catherine Parr may be another early clue that Elizabeth felt positively about her mother. It's very, very small, but she chose to translate Marguerite of Navarre's moralistic The Mirror of the Sinful Soul. I'm sorry. Sometimes these books have such flowery names. It may have been purposeful because Anne Boleyn had been well acquainted with Marguerite of Navarre when she was known as Marguerite of Angoulême. We've talked about her several times. It's actually a very nice translation. She did a very good job. Very smart little child. Pop off, Elizabeth. I mean, she's literally our age by then, so like, pop off.
We love you.
Peer. You're our age.
Please.
You want to be my friend? Change. Yeah, it's fine. It's fine. I'm 16 in a month, guys. So besides Elizabeth learning about her mother from the usual suspects, Catherine Champernowne, and Lady Bryan, Matthew Parker, Thomas Cranmer, her uncle by marriage, William Stafford, may have supplied her with information. William Stafford had married Elizabeth's maternal aunt, Anne Boleyn's sister Mary, for love in 1534, and he was still employed at court in the years when Elizabeth would have been visiting her father. Though Elizabeth's initial visits to court were few and far between, they still may have given Stafford the opportunity to interact with Elizabeth or even, like, pass information from his wife onto her niece, who she hadn't seen since 1534. Because Mary and Anne were estranged at the time of Anne's fall because Mary was sent away when she married William Stafford because he was, like, a no one. And the Boleyn family was mad that she didn't ask for permission to marry him or because they wanted to give her a better match than that. Yeah. They're trying to make allies, right? Because no one really likes them, so they have to make allies. Yeah. Mary still, even though they're estranged, Mary still may have had some good memories that she wanted to pass on through Elizabeth, through her husband, or other methods. Of course, this is all speculation, but in later years, Elizabeth's relationship with William Stafford and his second wife, Dorothy, suggests an already established bond that perhaps had its origins in childhood. Mary died in 1543.
Absolutely right.
Rip. She would have been young. Like, she's born in like 1500.
Yeah.
In 1554, when Elizabeth was 20, she came really close to sharing the exact same fate as her mother. You can only really imagine her horror when she was arrested at Ashridge and imprisoned in the Tower by her sister, Queen Mary I, for 3 months on suspicion of treason. Elizabeth, along with 4 female attendants, was imprisoned in the Queen's lodgings. So, Elizabeth is a prisoner of royal birth because she's King Henry VIII's daughter and Mary's sister. So she gets a few privileges. She's there for a long time, so she needs them. She could take a daily supervised walk. It had to be supervised because, you know, she could run away, which unfortunately took her right along the wall that overlooked the scaffold site before the House of Ordnance. So therefore, if Elizabeth wanted fresh air and the opportunity to stretch her legs, she had to repeatedly pass the exact place where her mother died.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah, it's really kind. Thanks, Mary. And where she, Anne Boleyn's daughter, might actually meet her own end. Because she didn't know if she was going to get killed or not. Yeah. Years later, when Elizabeth was queen, she divulged to a French nobleman that she had actually thought that she would die in the Tower and that she could not bear the thought of an axe hacking at her neck. So she had resolved herself to ask for a French swordsman instead, because that way she, like her mother, could be quickly dispatched.
Mm-hmm.
Poor little baby.
Poor baby.
Well, the young Elizabeth might not have remembered her aunt and perhaps had only brief encounters, if any, with her uncle in childhood, she did enjoy a special closeness with her Carey cousins. Catherine and Henry Carey were the children of Mary Boleyn. Literally rhyming, but whatever. Though their individual paternity is uncertain, because we don't know if either of them were Henry's kids or if one of them was Henry's child or what the heck was going on there.
Yeah.
Their relationship is another shining example because they were her first cousins no matter what, because they are Mary's kids and she is Anne's child. So they might be her half siblings as well, but they're definitely her first cousins, which is just a whole another example of messed up, but whatever. Their relationship is another shining example that Elizabeth felt positively about her mother, because if she had believed in her mother's guilt, she wouldn't have wanted to put her reputation at risk by associating with the immediate relatives of a convicted traitor and adulteress.
Right.
Elizabeth and her Carrie cousins first came into acquaintance in childhood. We can imagine how delighted Elizabeth must have been to have finally made contact with a part of her life that had been forbidden to her for so long. They're, like, a few years older than her. Like, 10? No, probably, like, 8. Like, Henry's, like, maybe, like, 5 years older than her, and Catherine's, like, 7.
I see.
So, that's a vibe. I have cousins that I'm, like, older than that, so.
Yeah.
Real fun time having... I hate having cousins that are so much younger than me. It's really not very fun. But it's okay. Elizabeth probably first met Henry Carey when he was her father's ward, or possibly a short time after, when he became a member of the king's household. So the cousins were certainly acquaintances by 1551, because Edward is still king at this time, since Elizabeth's Hatfield accounts for the years 1551 to 52 show that she made a monetary gift at the christening of Mr. Carey's child. This child was probably Philadelphia Carey. What a name. She was later the wife of Baron Thomas Grope, and she and her elder sister, Catherine Carey Howard, were to become two of Elizabeth's favorite maids of honor. While one or both of the Carey siblings could have been Elizabeth's half-siblings, she certainly would have heard the rumors, and she likely had formed her own opinion on the matter. Elizabeth could never safely make any overtures that would suggest as much, because this would have been proof of the impediment concerning her mother and father's marriage. Elizabeth had been declared illegitimate in 1536 simply because her father's affair with Mary Boleyn happened, despite a prior papal dispensation that allowed Henry to marry the sister of his mistress. Mm. It's a whole another can of worms that Anne's marriage was annulled 2 days before she died for adultery, and you can't be an adulterer if you've never been married.
Yeah.
But whatever. Siblings or not, the bond between Elizabeth, Henry, and Catherine was really unusually strong, because after she became queen, Elizabeth treated them both with a great deal less formality than she treated her other intimates at court, and she often laughed and joked with them boisterously, particularly in the case of Henry. Upon her accession to the throne in November of 1558, Elizabeth immediately began assembling her maternal relatives around her in what you could call like a makeshift family. She doesn't really have any close family members left. Mm-hmm. Henry and Catherine were her closest living blood relatives, aside from the problematic Grey sisters. That's a whole another can of worms, because all three of them were in the Tower at some point. Because they kept getting married without, like, permission. And then, obviously, Jane Grey tried to become queen. Margaret Douglas, Countess of Lennox, was her cousin. So that is Margaret Tudor's daughter. And then, of course, Mary Stuart, Queen of Scots, is her cousin as well. But she lives in Scotland at the moment. So she's, like, in her view, but, like, she's not really that close. The Carey siblings were Elizabeth's only direct connection to her mother, because Mary Boleyn died in 1543. And unlike Elizabeth's, like, most of Elizabeth's friendships and romantic attachments, her Carey cousins' devotion to her never wavered. Elizabeth never had to question their integrity or loyalty, and she found great peace and perhaps even a feeling of safety because of it. Because Elizabeth's throne was never really safe.
Yeah.
Catholic Europe was always trying to take it away from her.
Uh-huh.
The Spanish Armada, Mary Queen of Scots, all that sort of thing. In the end, it was Elizabeth who was with Catherine Carey Knollys when she died in 1569 at Hampton Court Palace, where Francis Knollys, her husband, was away on state business. Both Henry and Elizabeth mourned Catherine's passing with equal intensity, and her husband did as well. So Catherine's husband lamented that his case was pitiful and that he was distracted with sorrow. Elizabeth assisted with her cousin's funeral, and she paid more for her burial than she had ever for any other relation. The sum reached the modern equivalent of £111,300.
Wow.
Which is a lot. Elizabeth. Chilling. Okay. She's like, whatever, I have money, I can use it.
So cool.
So many people wonder why Elizabeth would constantly assert that she was a lion's cub and her father's daughter if she believed that her father had deprived her of a mother by unlawfully ending her life on trumped up charges. And why didn't Elizabeth, like her sister Mary, push to have her mother's reputation restored and her parents' marriage declared legitimate? First of all, Catherine of Aragon's reputation was never negative.
Yeah.
The English people saw her as the saint, but Mary did make her parents' marriage declared legitimate. The answer to the first question is very simple. Elizabeth was first and foremost a survivor, and her choice to stress her connections to her father rather than to her mother was deliberate and strategic. With so much doubt cast on Elizabeth's paternity, it was essential that she continued to stress all throughout her life that she was the daughter of King Henry VIII. And while her father was royal, a distinction that gave her prestige and respectability, her mother was the daughter of an upwardly mobile nobleman, one of King Henry's new men. There was no reason to stress a connection that would politically gain her nothing. While Elizabeth did constantly stress her paternity, she also didn't hide away her pride in being her mother's daughter. In fact, she sometimes flaunted it. So on her way to her coronation in 1559, Elizabeth passed through a triumphal arch in Grace Church Street during her progress through London to Westminster Abbey. One of the spectacles displayed en route in her honor was a very blatant tribute to both her father and her mother. The Pageant of the Roses featured life-size effigies of King Henry and Anne Boleyn seated together on a dais. And above the effigies of the two of them sat Elizabeth's own figure. So she had like her whole little family.
Aww.
And she apparently did acknowledge it. She was like, chill. Thanks, guys. There's also evidence to support the theory that the lighter crown worn by Queen Elizabeth after her coronation may have been the one originally made for her mother in 1533. We don't know this because, like, all of the royal jewels basically got melted down during the Civil War in the 1600s. So, thanks, Oliver Cromwell. Of course you're Cromwell.
Cromwell.
Everyone hates you. Yeah, he's just real fun. Since Elizabeth's decision to stress her paternity rather than play up the connections to her mother is understandable, the harder question to answer is why did she not do as Mary had done and reverse the legal rulings concerning her parents' marriage? There was actually much debate early in Elizabeth's reign as to whether she should do as her sister had done. It would have been unwise to bring up and dissect old controversies surrounding her mother's conviction and execution. Doing so would certainly have caused not only an uproar in England, but also Catholic Europe, who watched Queen Elizabeth and all her decisions with great interest, ready to take over at any moment. To have rehashed the past may have cast further doubt on the already precarious Tudor dynasty and Elizabeth's actually right, like her right to rule. Right. Queen Elizabeth ultimately chose to put aside her probably personal belief that her mother was innocent. Instead, she favored a more reasonable approach, which would help to ensure the stability of her realm. Instead of ordering a full-blown investigation, Elizabeth took the advice of her Lord Keeper of the Great Seal, Sir Nicholas Bacon. He had pointed out to her that she was the lawful heiress to the throne under Henry's 1544 Act of Succession, because the Act of Succession went Henry, then Edward, then any of Edward's children, then any of the children that Henry had with Catherine Parr at that point, and then their children, then Mary, then her children, then Elizabeth, and all those other people were dead. Wow. So
look at that.
She was the lawful heiress. There's no further validation that they needed to give. Parliament also drew up a sparsely worded, to-the-point statute confirming Elizabeth's right to be Queen of England, and she had a separate act passed declaring that she was her mother's sole heiress. Big up, Elizabeth, for doing that. Which enabled her to inherit her mother's property because it had been forfeited to the crown upon Anne's death. So that would be like her, because she was like the Marquess of Pembroke, so she inherited Anne's Pembroke lands. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Elizabeth.
Thanks.
Honestly, pop off. Pop off for that. Anne did a really good job at running those things. I just like to say that because I was reading Catherine Howard, Young and Damned and Fair, and they were talking about how Kitty just kind of like let people run her like lands for her, but Anne and Catherine of Aragon were a lot more like involved. Yeah. Elizabeth also had like a pretty big aversion to violence, which is a very un-Tudor like quality, like when compared to her dad and her sister and even like her brother, because obviously like she did have people executed, most notably like Mary Queen of Scots, but it took her a really long time to let them do that. She really didn't want to. And also, she reigned for, like, 60 years or whatever. It wasn't 60 years. It was, like, 40 years. I can't actually count. But, like, she reigned for a very long time. No one else in her family reigned that long. And she, if you average out their years, she did not kill nearly as many people as anyone else in her family. But she had, like, a really big aversion to decapitation. Wonder why. Yeah. Especially when it had to do with actual, like, relations, such as Thomas Howard, who was the 4th Duke of Norfolk, and Mary Stuart, Queen of Scots. This was probably due in large part to her childhood traumas and her own near-death experience in the reign of her sister. Elizabeth also always made a great effort to try and spare her people of the frequent violence that she had personally experienced and that they had endured under the rules of her family members.
Good for her.
Good job, Lizzie. You were still kind of violent sometimes, but
we'll get that.
Your dad killed like 75,000 people, so.
Yeah.
Hop off. After Elizabeth was excommunicated by the Pope in 1572, she had Matthew Parker, Archbishop of Canterbury, track down and study the papal bull of dispensation from 1528 that had sanctioned her parents' marriage. So that was the one that said that Henry could wed the wife of, like, wed the sister of his mistress or whatever. Yeah. Elizabeth wanted to have the document on file in case she needed to prove her legitimacy to Catholic Europe. Another way we know how Elizabeth felt about her mother was that she chose to adopt her mother's heraldic emblem and motto, and she displayed it publicly. Queen Elizabeth used one of her mother's mottos, Semper Idem, which is Latin for the phrase, always the same. That's not one of Anne's, like, most prominent mottos, but it is one of them. I don't know why she had so many. Like, she had, like, four. My personal favorite is Ainsi Sarah Grenier, Key Grenier, which means grumble all you like, this is how it'll be.
Main character energy.
It's so, like, petty, but I also love it. And that's that scene with the ribbon and the Tudors where she's like, I have had a new motto made. And Henry's like, where is it? She's like, you have to find it. And
it's oh, so right.
You know yeah. what I'm talking about. Yeah. She also adopted Anne's badge of a crowned falcon upon a tree stump surrounded by Tudor roses. I don't think that was, like, her main badge. I don't know, but she adopted it as one of them. And the falcon is the heraldic charge that stands for perseverance, which is a quality that both Elizabeth and Anne embodied. And Anne played that in yeah. the pageant. I don't know. She's just obsessed with that word, I guess. At St. Margaret's Church in Norfolk, the tympanum, I don't know, that dates from 1587 actually displays the Tudor arms and Queen Elizabeth's achievements. So if you look closely, you will be able to see the crowned falcon badge painted below the Tudor family shield. Amongst Queen Elizabeth's many virginals, which is, like, basically a piano, an older piano. I had to do piano history when I did piano, so it was the most boring thing ever. But there is a set one that bears the Boleyn coat of arms and may once have belonged to Queen Anne herself. The pair of virginals are now part of the collection in the Victoria and Albert Museum in London. 30 years after a 10- or 11-year-old Elizabeth had defiantly donned her mother's A-initial pendant in the portrait of the family of King Henry VIII, she commissioned a unique piece of jewelry herself. Even if you disregard all the other evidence that I just presented, this ring pretty much proves that Elizabeth believed in her mother's innocence. In 1575, Elizabeth commissioned a gold locket ring, which was covered in diamonds that formed the letter E for Elizabeth and had the letter R for Regina in blue enamel. She's just, like, obsessed with jewelry and fashion and money, basically. The locket's secret compartment opened to reveal the painted miniature reliefs of her mother and herself side by side. Some people think that it's not her mother and it's Catherine Parr, but I'm pretty sure that the general opinion is that it's her mom, because...
Yeah.
Like, I love Catherine Parr, but why? Why would she have that? And it looks enough like Anne's painting that, like, it works. From 1575 until her death, Elizabeth never took the ring off her finger. It only left her person after she died, when it was taken to her successor, James VI of Scotland and James I of England, as proof of her death. The ring is now in the Chequers collection, from which it derived its name. In Rain, they have a scene where there's, like, I don't know, I saw it in an edit, so I actually have never seen Rain. It was an Anne and Elizabeth edit, so they use, like, stuff from Rain, because I guess Elizabeth has a lot of angst about Anne in that series. I don't know. But it was, like, their servants or whatever, they're like, she's had a ring made, and they're like, with who? Robert Dudley? And they're like, no, it's her mother. Dun dun dun. Which is so funny, because if she commissioned this in 1575, she's like 42, and the actress who plays her in Rain is like 22. Like, oh, at least try and keep a timeline, my friends. Like, what are you doing? But it's Rain. What, like, I don't know. That's the end of my story. And now Montana's is trying to get me to go to a family barbecue. Wow. No. I love Montana's. Love it so much. Yeah, guys. Our next episode, Anne's going to get her head chopped off.
Oh.
And then we're moving on to someone else. So that was our last Anne mini-sode. Because we're going to take a week break in between people. So we'll do Anne. She will be killed. Then we will have a week off. And then we will start our next person. But we're not telling you who it is yet, because you have to wait.
What a mystery.
Like, Grace doesn't know. Honestly, Quinn doesn't know either. I'm figuring it out, guys. I don't know. I have a book for both of them, so I don't know which one I'll do, but I think that it might be who it probably should be next, because, you know, yeah, we're thinking things through, guys. We have, like, five people that I think that we're gonna do at some point in this season. We might do more, I don't know, but right now, keep your eyes peeled, because you gotta, like, I don't know. Go follow us on Instagram, please. Because if you don't follow us on Instagram, you missed my absolutely hilarious Valentine yesterday. You can go check them out. They're
beautiful.
Yeah, I only posted one, though. Should have posted the Anne one, too. Pretty great. Pretty amazing.
Ask me.
It scared Grace.
Yeah.
She was like, what was that? Yeah. So follow us on Instagram at NotSoBloodyMary_podcast. It's mostly for, like, updates and stuff, so that you can keep up to date with what we're doing. So that when we randomly disappear, you know that we're not dead.
Yeah.
Or
that we are dead.
follow Grace on TikTok.
Do you remember the handle?
At the lovely underscore bookworm.
Almost a 10K.
Yeah. Yeah, she's almost there, guys. Go get her to 10K, and then I can have a famous friend, because Grace Mode is my friend, but I don't think she knows that we're friends. Yeah, Grace Mode, if you're listening, we're friends, right? DM me at NotSoBloodyMary_podcast and tell me that we're friends. Yeah, I'll write and review your podcast, Grace, if you write and review mine.
We love that.
I actually really need to listen to her podcast. Cut to the Grace. That's a promo. She didn't pay us to do that. I could listen to British people talk for like hours on end. So yes, I know. But like real British people, not. You know what? I don't know. But none of my podcast people are British. I need British people on my podcasting network. So Grace Mowat, we're gonna hit you up. Yeah. Everyone, what can we say? If you're from Ontario and you're a student, I'm really sorry that you don't get March break. We don't get it either, and we're really sad, because it's the week before my birthday, and I need that week. It's like my time. Honestly, I use it every year to recharge before all my family comes for my birthday, and I have to like deal with all that attention, because attention gives me anxiety. Yeah, so we're not going to say anything bad about the government, but it's not the best decision for my mental health.
Nor for mine.
Personally, I need a break.
I can't do it.
Hey, bestie, I personally cannot deal with this today. Thank you. Yeah. If you're not from Ontario and you live in Canada and you're still getting March break, I'm really jealous of you, and I would like to come live in your house.
I'll wear a mask before I come.
Yeah, Grace, I don't know. This is just, like, sad. because I need to talk to you, but, like, in person.
Literally,
but I
can't it's see actually you. So upsetting.
And I have, like, 200 oh TikToks. Oh, my God. I don't think there's actually 200 because I keep getting distracted.
I think I have, like, TikToks, five to show you.
Because I don't post you anything. Just
make them for me, for my eyes only.
Yeah, because I don't like people seeing them because I don't want universities to be like, what is
watching
wrong
with your TikToks?
None of yours are
highlight of my life.
I mean, no universities that you're gonna look at are gonna think your book talk TikToks are bad, but I have like a really bad anxiety that universities are gonna look at my TikToks and be like, what the heck, even though I want to go to university for It'll history and that. English.
You're good.
Whatever. Everyone, go drink some water. Go take a walk outside because it's very nice out today where we are. Unless it's like not nice, but you should go sit outside and like if it's sunny, just drink in the sun because vitamin D is good for you and apparently it helps you fight coronavirus. So you should do that. My family makes me eat vitamin D pills every day. So yeah, they're kind of gross because we just finished the chocolate ones and now we're back to like these tiny little like citrus ones. No, thanks. Tune in next time where Anne gets her head chopped off. Anne, we love you. Elizabeth, pop off. Pop off. I just did the snap thing, but you can't see it. Yeah, I don't know. Have a good day, everyone. Have a good night. Have a good evening.
We love you.
Go listen to Taylor Swift's version of Love Story, the re-recorded version. You have to go do that right now because I told you to, because it's very good and I love it. Also, go listen to Wonderland by Taylor Swift. I'm getting on some Swift Gron today. Yeah. Have a good day. Tell someone that you love them.
Don't burn a bunch of Protestants.
Yeah, Mary. She would burn me, and honestly, that's my proudest achievement to date. Henry and I were talking about last night.
She'd burn me.
We're very proud of the fact you're baptized Catholic, so she would like you.
I keep forgetting about that.
Yeah, you are a baptized Catholic, church. So you would survive. I would not. I would be burned alive. You can hide in my closet. And so would Henry. in the closet. Yeah. Yeah, so I would be burned, and I think that's what I'm going to leave all of you with today. I would be burned at the stake if Mary Tudor was queen. Actually, I would hide my religion because I'm a coward.
Bye!
Bye, everyone!
Love you.
Love you all. Bye.